First thing I'm going to do is get you guys to introduce yourselves. That's okay.
My name's David. Should I say my whole name?
Do it.
I'm David Gordon Koch. I'm Summer Resource Library and Poster Archives Coordinator.
Hi, my name's Ashley Forte, and I'm the Administration Coordinator at Kuiperg Concordia.
I'm Jaggi Singh, and I am the Working Groups and Programming Coordinator here at Kuiperg.
Thanks, guys. Hey, everyone. I'm Peter. I'm a first-year student at SIS at McGill. I'm just doing a quick segment that's designed to introduce McGill students to a research network that they may not be at all aware of that exists to support grassroots movements and activism in the city of Montreal. I'm really hoping that this can introduce some socially engaged individuals to what you guys do here and maybe get you some more volunteers. So I would really like all of you to start by maybe introducing your library's mandate and what you sort of see the library's role in Montreal as.
Well, okay, so I guess I'll tell you what Kuiperg is, and then I'll tell you what the library, what role the library plays at Kuiperg. So Kuiperg Concordia is a resource center on Concordia campus, much like the Kuiperg at McGill. We're a resource center for both students and community members who want to get involved in social justice and environmental justice. And we have a lot of different projects and programming coming out of our organization, one of which is our alternative resource library. And so the mandate of the library is to carry books, magazines, zines, films on topics that relate to our mandate of social justice and environmental justice and do that in a way that sort of addresses multiple issues in terms of buying books that are, you know, if we're carrying books that cover topics relating to the lives and struggles of marginalized communities, that those are being written by folks coming from those communities and that they're representing themselves. And we also try and source our resources locally as much as possible, and really look for things that are harder to find in more mainstream libraries and bookstores.
Well, one thing that seemed clear to me from looking at the website of Kuiperg in Kuiperg Concordia and Kuiperg McGill is that you guys kind of exist in a really productive opposition to traditional academic libraries. And I wanted to ask at least one of you to maybe describe what you see your role in the life of a student who is frustrated with the collection that exists at Concordia or at McGill. What role do you fill in supporting things like your working groups or any activist who wants to use your resource collection?
Well, I guess first of all, I wouldn't necessarily see our library as an opposition to the library collections at McGill and Concordia. It's more complementing them in the sense that what you'll find here are subject matter and materials that are hard to find in those libraries because they are fulfilling more of their academic function. And what we're fulfilling here is what Ashley described earlier, which is fulfilling the mandate of both PERGs, which is a social and environmental justice mandate in a lot of those topics. So, you know, we seek out materials that are harder to find on topics that relate to the social justice mandate, and we emphasize that people are speaking in their own voices, and we aren't looking at movements or people or cultures or histories as objects, but rather things to be respected, and that really motivates where we're coming from. So an average student or a member of the community, I think on a basic level, should just come here and discover on their own in their own way through the website or through visiting just how all these issues connect and the various really creative, intelligent ways that people express social and environmental justice struggles and issues. I think this can complement coursework in a lot of ways. We have had people come by who can only find books or extra copies of books at one of the alternative libraries. We encourage very much a community-based social justice research model. So there are people who try to do that within their coursework. There are people who try to do that outside their coursework as well, because knowledge is being created in different contexts. So the libraries are here to complement that. There's also a process, we try to encourage a process of participation. I mean, people get into conversations with us. We encourage people to give us suggestions. Working groups at both PERGs are encouraged to make suggestions about what to cover. We've tried, at least in this library, to create bibliographies on different topics. You can see them on our walls. These bibliographies were created by our previous library coordinator to coincide with the book reading events that we've done. So that's another way in which this stuff is expressed. Like, we try to break that barrier between author or producer of the material and the people consuming it, and try to create situations where we can talk about it. So we've done that a few times in the past few months, and we're intending to do quite a bit more of that in the upcoming year through our programming at Cooper Concordia.
And I think that it's also good to have a place where people can read about things and then put the knowledge that they get from the text that we have here into action, because this is a hub of activism. And I'd also add that one thing that sets us apart from other libraries is our zine collection. And for listeners who might not know, zines are works that are self-published by many people, creative people, artists, activists. And we have hundreds of them here on topics like feminism, anti-racism, disability issues, things like that. These are very rare, and they're often distributed through grassroots networks, and you just won't find them other places. So, I mean, two examples of places where we've acquired zines recently are Anarchist Book Fair and also the Queer Lit Book Fair that happened here in Montreal recently.
And both those projects, the Queer Lit Book Fair and the Anarchist Book Fair, are projects that are affiliated with the PERGS in one way or another. The Anarchist Book Fair is a working group here and gets support, and the Queer Lit Book Fair is a project coming out of QT. Ashley could talk more about it. But, you know, the library, the resource library, either going on the website or coming physically to one of the libraries is a starting point. Dave was mentioning where you can really activate, whether it's through the activism of groups, whether it's through other literary means like the book fairs and all kinds of events that are happening all the time.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, as Dave was mentioning, the zine collection has a lot of, like, it's a really, really broad spectrum of self-published works, and a lot of it is coming out of, like, writers and organizers who have live or do live in Montreal. And so what's cool about the collection is that it's really not only a starting point for people, like Jaggy was saying, but it also archives and takes stock of the work that people are doing, right? And so a few things that come to mind are, like, last summer we at Kuberg funded a summer stipend project to create a visual archive zine of radical queer organizing in the last 5 years in Montreal. And so this large zine that came out of it was, like, posters and flyers collected from over the city of different organizing that's happened. The zine's called Créé par des Queers, Queers Made This. And so this is like a really cool way if you're wanting to, like, plug into the kind of organizing that's going on in the city, but also showing the way that those kind of things are getting documented. And, you know, that's part of the project here, too, is archiving activist work. And Dave can talk a little bit more about a related project that we have coming out of the library, which is our poster archive. But I won't go into more of that because I think Dave wants to speak to that in a bit.
Thank you. Yeah, that's something I wanted to ask all of you, but especially the library coordinator. Clearly, one of your roles is to document and support the history of activism in Montreal. I know, Dave, you were telling me earlier about some pieces that you feel document activist culture, not just in Montreal, but that comprise really useful pieces of information from all over North America, but particularly Montreal. And I was wondering if you wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Are you talking about the poster archives now?
I'm talking about the zine in your hand.
The zines, okay.
Yeah.
Zines, yeah, okay. A couple of zines that we have here. One is called Rock Out, Ideas on Booking DIY Shows, and it was published originally by some organizers in Chicago who were into organizing benefits for a women's health center there. And so it's a really practical guide and really beautifully put together with lots of photos from their shows and stuff about how to organize a show. So everything from how to find bands with lyrics that are anti-oppressive, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-homophobic, to try to change the punk scene, for example, locally. Everything from that to how to promo a show, how to make flyers, how to make your own wheat paste, so you can wheat paste posters around town, how to find volunteers, things like that. And so we have a copy of that in our library. A locally produced one I have here is called A Resource Guide for Anti-Racist Feminism, Tools for White Feminists. And this is about how to unpack racial privilege and how to address, for example, this has instructions on how to have a workshop about white privilege. So addressing racism within feminist circles, and it's got some amazing quotes from authors like bell hooks, for example. Yeah, and so this was published by local activists in Montreal.
There were a couple others. One I think is really cool. There's actually two issues of it now, and it's called Nail Biter, an anxiety zine, and it was also put together by some folks locally in Montreal, and it's an anthology of artwork and creative writing and useful information, testimonials, all about dealing with people who have anxiety in their lives. And it's just like a really, really cool project because it's brought together stories and information, like looking at anxiety and mental health from an anti-oppressive framework, alternatives to sort of the mainstream like Western health approach, and also just like information about support networks, and also just but also the creation of it was a really important outlet for people who do deal with anxiety. And it's, I think the second issue, it actually won like one of the best zines at Expo Zine last year or something, and it's really, really beautifully made. The covers are like silk screened, and the second one is like, you know, it has a perfect binding. It's more of a book than a zine, I would argue. But I mean, I guess there's the lines blur. But all that to say that it is really collaborative, awesome, exciting project coming out of Montreal, and really hard to find kinds of resources around mental health stuff. So that would be another one that I would highlight that we have in our collection. And there are two issues of it so far.
Yeah, and one zine I guess I'll highlight is basically an original interview by Robin Maynard, a member of Nolan's Legal, with Lorenzo Cabot Irvin, who is a former member of the Black Panther Party and was very active in social movements in the 50s and 60s, was a political prisoner who actually spent a lot of time in prison, and has been quite an inspiration to political prisoner movements and also anarchist movements, in particular anarchist people of color movements. And actually this zine coming together, it's fairly recent. It was put together in time for the Anarchist Book Fair this year. And it's actually a second in a series, because the first series was interviews with Ojori Lotalo and with Ashanti Alston, who are two other African-American former political prisoners, but people who are active in social movements as well. So a lot of things come together because Robin is a member of Nolan's Legal, which is a local group active on migrant justice issues and anti-racist issues. She and I actually co-produce a radio show called Nolan's Legal Radio, which is part of CKUT's Off the Hour, first Thursday of every month. And these interviews are actually transcripts from interviews we did on CKUT. The cover that Ashley just mentioned from the Anxiety Zine, it's a beautiful silkscreen cover in color. It was done at the St. Emily Skillshare, which is a working group here at CUPERG Concordia. And similarly, Robin put together a nice color cover for this scene at the St. Emily Skillshare. So a lot of interesting elements come together. And again, we go back to some of the original question you asked about the importance of these libraries, and part of it is historical memory, right? And it's not just finding old books and old zines, but talking to people and oral history. And one really good way of showing oral history is through audio and tapes, what we're doing now. Actually, we don't have them out here, but we have a lot of tape from the past, like old cassette tapes of Noam Chomsky lectures or Michael Parenti. And, in the 80s and even in the early 90s, that was one way that we convey that knowledge. And, now we use DVDs and computers and what have you, and just transcribing interviews. So this is a great zine, and I'm also really really inspired by like just the process of it as well, because Lorenzo, he's in his 60s now, but he took the time to speak to a younger activist and share those skills and reminiscences and what have you. So we've just given a little taste, the three of us, of times what we just said by about 200 or 300, and you get an idea of what you can discover. You can get yourself lost if you just spend time here and just start reading and rummaging through things.
That sounds like something I really want to do. You guys are making me more and more fascinated the longer you speak. What seems really clear to me from everything that you guys are saying is that by representing a sort of memory for activist culture, especially in the city, you're also really supporting creation of new and interesting ways for people to explore those ideas. And one question I really wanted to ask all of you is, as an organization that runs on volunteers, how could anyone who's listening to this broadcast get in here and help you guys do what you want to do?
There are lots of ways to get involved. We always need help cataloging new materials, getting them on our database, which is searchable online, alternativelibraries.org, which has our catalog as well as CUPERG McGill's.
We're in the process of getting other groups onto that database as well.
Yeah, we're in the process of getting other groups on that database. So we've got heaps of things to get cataloged. We just got a big donation the other day of lots of zines, including zines on Indigenous sovereignty, anarchism, aside from that kind of work, we're setting up a poster archive online. We can definitely use people's help if they want to get involved in preserving that often ephemeral symbols of resistance in the city of Montreal, and getting those online. And other things like organizing events. The Cuperg Library has put on events like book launches. The last one was for the book Feminism for Real. And other things, other initiatives, if people want to get involved in outreach so that people know more about the library, to plug people in, those are all options. And people can be creative too and come in here because it's their library.
No, it seems like you guys are really super inclusive of everybody who's interested in what you're doing. And I for one, really appreciate that. You've been so friendly and so amazing in this interview.
Just to add to what Dave was saying, that if you are interested in volunteering in the library, you can just send an email to library@cupergconcordia.com. So Q-P-I-R-G, Concordia, all one word, .org. And you can find out more about how to get involved specifically with the library. And if you go to cupergconcordia.org, the website, all our different projects coming out of the space are well described there. So there's lots of different ways to get involved with our organization.
If you don't mind, I would really like to hear a lot more about how the poster archive is going to be fully expressed. I know it's currently under construction, mm-hmm. which is why you're definitely asking for help, I think, for anyone who's experienced in doing that kind mm-hmm. of work. Mm-hmm. If you could tell me a little bit more about the reason that you guys first put it together, and maybe even some of the history of the poster archives, like who first proposed it and how long it's been sort of sitting and germinating in your guys' heads.
Well, a space like Cuperg, and there's lots of spaces like this all over Montreal, you know, social justice organizations, housing rights groups, et cetera, they've been around for a few years, and you know, you come across a lot of posters. They're hanging in your space on your bulletin boards, and it's really disappointing if you just take down those posters and throw them in recycling. So as long as I've been here, they haven't gone in recycling. They've gone in a box with the hope that someday we'll make an archive out of it. And it's just not me. Others have done the same thing in previous years. So, you know, when we've gone through our files and things, people have collected this. And it really provides a visual history of social justice mobilizing in Montreal and elsewhere. You know, the PERGs early in their history were very much about environmental issues. So a lot of things we take totally for granted now, like recycling and composting, all those things when they were considered a bit weird and counterculture and radical, those were what PERGs were doing. You see the change in international solidarity work from emphasis on Central American solidarity and solidarity with South Africa and a boycott of South Africa, and you move forward to East Timor solidarity, to now a lot of solidarity with Palestine, critiquing Israeli apartheid. There's just an immense treasure trove of visual history. And so some of the things that prodded this poster archive was realizing that we got to do something with all these boxes that we're gathering. That's a very practical one. Secondly, a few years ago, there was a great book that was published called Picture This, and it was basically a book giving a poster history of organizing in Quebec. It was put out by Cumulus Press in conjunction with the archive at UQAM. And that archive at UQAM has this huge silver envelope where they encourage people to put in their posters. And so the person who was curating that book, because that book was 2 or 3 years to come together, visited people who had a lot of posters, so I got a visit, but also visited organizations. And so that got me thinking, well, you know, why don't we, all of us, do this? And he was encouraging folks to actually archive and not lose sight of these things. And when you actually look at old stuff, it's great just for inspiration for posters and design now. It's great to see how people convey ideas, especially in eras where, you know, you can't take the web and social media for granted. So essentially about two years ago, we were at the capacity where we could start building a poster archive. So we had a previous coordinator who was able to sort of categorize things, start the steps towards getting something online. We could start highlighting things on our walls as well. So we have stuff from our poster archive up on our walls. And the idea of actually having it online is something that is now more feasible. And Dave's the one who's been working the last several months and weeks on getting that poster archive together. And I guess one other thing to mention in terms of the Concordia context is that this is something that's been strongly encouraged by the Concordia archives. It just so happens that people who work in library sciences and archive sciences tend to be a bit more progressive because they really emphasize sharing of knowledge in a very accessible way. That's something that they take to heart. Having done walking tours of the campus, you know, we visited the archives, and it was just great to see old posters, old materials, old pamphlets. It's not just posters. It's also pamphlets and postcards and things. And they also were encouraging it. So from UCAM archive, from the archive here, from just having a lot of stuff and knowing how important it is to represent visual history, those are all some of the motivations for the poster archive.
Thank you. If I can ask maybe a more archival question, definitely more based on library sciences, I'd really like to know in archives, things like posters and, as you were saying, pieces of visual history are often categorized as ephemera, as the words, while they may not mean, mean frivolous document to an archivist, because all documents are important. They certainly have those connotations, and I feel like in activist culture, posters occupy a much different role. And I was wondering if you guys, this is a bit of an abstract question, but if you could maybe speak to what a visual history of posters means concretely to somebody who would be going through the archive. Like, what kind of deep impressions would you be pulling out of it?
I think it's a source of inspiration. One thing that's really special about the poster collection we have is that we're living in a city with a great history of resistance and community organizing, and also a city with amazing wealth of artistic talent. These things come together in this visual history with the passion of the social environmental justice activists being represented in these beautiful works of art. And I think that it's important to preserve that, to have that memory.
Oh, I think it's a question also of institutional memory, right? Because, lowercase I. But, like, we see waves of people, like, obviously there's many people who engage in social justice organizing, community organizing throughout their whole lives. But there are sort of, like, upsurges of times when people first get involved and are looking for clues as to, like, how to plug in or how to go about things. And we're often sort of, like, reinventing the wheel all the time. And I think if we have this record of work that's been going on, it really helps as a way to sort of, like, access knowledge and access inspiration and sort of from previous generations of organizers, so that we know where we're coming from and the work we're trying to do. I think also something that we touched on a little bit earlier is just the idea around our library and the poster archive as a part of this is to sort of question traditional ideas of how people learn, how people absorb information, and having a visual archive, the same as that zine that I was talking about, is a different way that people can absorb information, a different way people can access an understanding of what that history looks like, and a history that we understand to be like a living history and that's growing all the time, right? That is quite different than having to sit and read like a 300-page book about, you know, which is equally as valid but not necessarily accessible to everyone or not necessarily what people are looking for. And so I think to me that's a big importance for the archive as well.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just occurring to me as you were speaking that in very staid, very long-term organizations like maybe the Royal Society in London or something, institutional memory is comprised of memos and you know, inter-office communications and proceedings of the Royal Society and stuff. But in activist society, it occurs to me, and I'm not sure if what I'm saying is valid. Maybe you can respond to it. It seems like posters would be the way in which memory is expressed, the way that events are recorded. And these things may not always be recorded in newspaper archives or in people's notebooks.
It's definitely one way. I mean, definitely social movements and activist culture, you know, keep historical memory in other ways as well, including memos and books and the rest of it. But when I think of what's inspiring about posters and visual memory is that it's not just an artifact, right? Like, you know that those posters were being put up in spaces all over the city on poles, and definitely within the last decade or so, posters maybe have less of an emphasis on the street because of social media, but definitely, you know, as short as 5 years ago and prior, that was a major means of democratic communication. And we talked earlier about zines, and posters are similar to zines, a very DIY effort. The distribution system is as democratic as you can get, putting up a poll in your neighborhood, on a bulletin board, in a community space. The production of it is also relatively accessible and democratic as well. So, you know, you know that those posters are there's something behind it. There were hands and people placing them up, and when you talk about flyers, passing them out as well. And, you know, there's been an effort by the city and other forces to sort of clamp down on that public space, you know. So those posters are a reflection of the use of that public space. So public space is being used just for festivals that are very corporate and monolithic, or for billboards, of course, you know, to use an obvious example. And posters sort of break through that. And, you know, the city has put forward regulations and stuff, and we've been fined, and I think every group in the city who's been involved with postering in one way or another has been fined. Certainly individuals have been fined to do that. So, you know, just the very act of it reflects an activism that's great to just rediscover. So I just want to add that to what Dave and Ashley said, which I agree with a lot as well.
The last thing I would say, too, is that what's interesting to me about posters is that not only do they record events that have happened or messages that have been distributed, but they record people's ideas of what they wanted an event to look like, or what they were hoping to get out of an event, or what kind of their version or view or vision of the issue that they're trying to address, right? Because, like, that's a very intentional and creative process to decide how are you trying to pitch this issue or this struggle or whatever to who are you trying to reach at what, you know, and the aesthetic choices around that and the sort of like messaging is, that's just interesting to me as well, right? Because it's a subjective choice too when you're making posters, and it's not just a recording of something that happened, but how people wanted to get that issue out to the broader community in general to begin with.
And something that's come up a couple of times, I've got so much stuff to try and fit into 5 minutes, but I can't stop because the longer you guys talk, the more I want to know, but I also don't want to keep you here forever. If I can ask one more library sciences question, something that Jaggy has brought up a couple of times in passing in reference to posters is that they're still important but de-emphasized in the face of social media. And one of the major issues facing library science now is digital archives of important, relevant records, and that those records, if they hold evidentiary value, regardless of the format, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, need to be put someplace. Is that a place that you could possibly see the poster archive going in the future? Is there a way that you could see, I don't know, Facebook events getting put onto a website, either as a screenshot or something?
Yes, but we need more volunteers.
Well, that's the perfect time for you to pitch a little bit more.
Well, the website that we're building, you know, it's under construction, and we could use a lot more, you know, people power to get it going. So anyone who wants to stop by and scan some posters and get them on our website, please do so. And you can contact the library coordinator here again, library at cuperconcordia.org.
Also, yeah, that question that you asked, like archiving stuff that is introduced like in a digital format to begin with, is super interesting to me. If we start promoting things and they're only promoted in a Facebook or email list or on a website or whatever, like, we think of them being like, okay, they're there, but they're not there forever, right? And so how do you preserve that? Or, like, I was working on a project outside of work to document or, like, to do a case study on Q-Team, which is one of the working groups here, and I was looking through, like, 4 years' worth of archives over our, like, internal listserv, and I'm just like, no one wants to read this, but actually it's really important for the research that I'm doing. And how do these collections get, you know, I think that is really interesting. Like, for us, most of the time when we put an event up on Facebook, we've already made a poster or a flyer, and the image that shows up there is, you know, so there's multiple formats in that we still try and use multiple formats to get our information out there. But certainly there's things that only end up going online. And I think it's like that's a big question, right? Like, because I do think that they have value, and there needs to be lasting value or a ways to access it to be able to reflect back on it.
You know, Marshall McLuhan said a long time ago, the medium is the message, and that can mean a lot of things. But like the medium that you choose to express an idea, there's a politics behind that, there's power behind that. So when we're confronted with a difficult question like the one you ask, I always sort of refer back to some of the core principles that we have, and one of them is accessibility. Mm-hmm. So insofar as social media is accessible, we use it. But posters are a very accessible medium. Talking to people is accessible, right? So we don't want to ever lose sight of that. The most basic way in which these ideas are communicated, and the best ways, they are face-to-face interactions in creating community, whether it's through community dinners, whether it's through one-on-one interactions, events, or just having a space where people can come and be, you know, feel like it's accessible in a variety of ways and accommodating to them and open to new ideas. So that's crucial. And also, I guess it's me who was sort of, you know, implying the emphasis of postering. It's, I think it's true, like social media has meant the emphasis, but there's a bit of a comeback. And one of the ones I want to highlight is just the project by Artung, who were a group of activists and artists who went out and just put up beautiful posters everywhere and actually did so on the official city billboards without their permission. They just got one of their keys and opened them up and put up imagery, right? And so seeing the city as a canvas, so I want to emphasize that as well. But any medium, whether it's social media or whatever, it's about reaching out to people, but how accessible it is. And I don't think any one media is inherently bad or good. It's what use we put to it, and just not making it exclusively one or the other. And as Dave was alluding to, in the end, it just becomes a question of capacity, both the capacity to use the media and also to archive it. And that's, you know, that's the challenge, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with what Jake was saying. And in terms of accessibility, I think one of the reasons that posters are accessible is because they're printed on cheap, non-archival quality paper, which is why it's important to get them online. And so if anyone wants to volunteer,
yes,
please drop by Cooper Concordia or email library@cooperconcordia.org.
Great. Thanks, guys. Well,
thanks,
in terms of building community, you guys have made me feel super welcome here. And you're such warm personalities. Thank you so much for an awesome interview.